Graham Cassidy goes up in flames, and it's Donald Trump versus professional sports, Steve Bannon, Republicans, the world.
And we'll give you this latest on the special election in Alabama.
And Trump's fight with America's Bill of Rights and the former executive director of, the executive director of Run for Something, Amanda Littman, is here to discuss their efforts to get millennials elected across the country. It's Tuesday. All that and more. Welcome to the Political Beat.
TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hey guys, welcome to AfterBuzz TV's The Political Beat, the millennial show and podcast breaking down the latest in Washington politics and news from around the world and the country. Happy National Voter Registration Day. I'm your host, Drexel Hurd. You can follow me on Twitter and all social media at Drexel Hurd. I am the voice of the moderate left.
And I am Chelsea Galicia, a voice of the progressive left. And you can follow me on social media at Chelsea Galicia. What is this?
Progressive left.
Breathing under your...
Be sure to follow the show at the at Political Beat TV. Just some housekeeping items. Next week, the founder and president of Hell's Kitchen Democrats and New York drag superstar, my good friend Marty Gold Cummings, is going to join us to discuss the organization and their recent really big, crazy win that they had in Hell's Kitchen in New York last week. Today on the show, in the first beat, we'll give you a rundown of today's top headlines, followed by this week's interview with Amanda Littman.
And in the breakdown, we'll talk about the president's fight with the NFL and my legal analysis of it.
And we'll spotlight ways you can help our fellow Americans in Puerto Rico as they sit without power and attempt to rebuild that U.S. territory there. It's a little crazy. So let's get to it. What's going on today?
All right. So first, the good news. The Graham Cassidy health care bill died, or they just decided not to put it to vote because fizzled. They knew. We've used way too many analogies. Up in flames, fizzled. I don't know which one it was. I don't think anybody was really surprised. Even last night on the CNN town hall, Lindsey Graham seemed to say, it's okay.
He looked defeated. Have you watched him during the debate? Like, he looked like he didn't want to be there. Lindsey Graham did.
You know what Lindsey Graham looked like? He looked like he was everybody's best friend. He was like, I'm really good friends with Bernie.
Did you catch his comment when he said something about how Lindsey's what did he say last night? He said Lindsey is gender neutral. He said that to Amy Klobuchar last night. It was very weird. Yeah.
So now that that's out, if they want to do health care, and it went out because there was a lot of people. It wasn't exactly. This was not the same like they were just going to lose by one vote. There were a lot more.
And I think that people have to realize about how this works, because people look to John McCain, the Republicans on the other side, certain Republicans. When you look at Susan Collins and you look at Lisa Murkowski, they're making at least in my viewpoint, a fundamental vote. Lisa Murkowski based her vote primarily on Planned Parenthood, which you don't hear a lot of Republicans do. Susan Collins, who's a moderate, was like, listen, this is just not a good bill, not just for Maine, but for people across the country. Whereas people like Rand Paul, John McCain was talking about process. It's not that he was against the bill and the subject matter of the bill and actually repealing, because we know that over the years, he has only been talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare. But Rand Paul was talking about money. Ted Cruz was talking about money. They don't care about people losing their health care. They actually just care about how much money it's going to cost. There's too much. They said it was giving too much to people.
Well, no. This is something that I agreed with. I heard an interview with Rand Paul, and he was saying that, yes, the money he doesn't like, because right now the federal government spends $1.2 trillion on health care under Obamacare. And what they want to do is take that same amount of money, $1.2 trillion,
put it in block grants,
and give it to the states, who are then going to give it to insurance companies.
Right.
And one thing that the left and the right are agreeing on these days is we hate the insurance companies.
Right.
They're ripping everyone off. So I think if there's a bipartisan effort, and I got a hint from last night's town hall that there might be.
I think that there is probably going to be some bipartisan solutions. However, you have to trust that states are going to do what they're going to do. The federal government's going to have to regulate how those states kind of allocate that money. and then watch those insurance companies do that. And I don't think that the Republicans are going to want to put that much effort
into... I don't think it'll be a block grant. I think maybe, I don't know, if there is a way to rein in the insurance companies without calling it regulations.
Well, you know that's going to happen because that's all they will say. That's all Republicans will talk about. But this bill is not, it's dead for now. Actually, if you saw any of the headlines today, it said for now. AP came up, for now. Politico, for now. It just said for now because we know that Republicans have a chance to revive something like this when it comes up next year.
But they're going to need 60 votes.
They're going to need 60 votes for now, but that does not mean that as we get in, and I think this goes to the heart of part of the conversation that we'll have with Amanda and part of the conversation that we'll have a little bit later, which is Democrats just got to get out and vote. If Democrats don't win back the majority in the House or the Senate, then this bill is going to be revived next year, and the chances of Republicans gaining more seats is like 50-50. Either Republicans are going to gain more seats, or Democrats are going to control back, get control of the House or the Senate again. So it's either or. And if Republicans gain more seats, just two more seats, healthcare will be ripped away from 32 million people. So, take that to the bank.
All right.
And just remember that as we go into these elections and we start talking about purity tests.
Oh, geez. Of course, he took it there.
Well, I mean, that's reality.
Okay.
What else is happening? Speaking of purity tests, Trump administration updating his travel ban policy.
Yeah, it's becoming more diverse. Is that what he's going for?
The travel ban policy is becoming more diverse. That's funny. Over the weekend, Trump tweeted, "Making America safe is my number one priority. We will not admit those into our country we cannot safely vet." So we know the travel ban was by executive order. The Trump administration originally had 90 days to kind of figure out what they were going to do. And the 90 days was coming up, so they had to reissue the travel ban again. Of course, it had gone through different legal issues, and it had gotten struck down, and then it didn't get struck down, and the Supreme Court was supposed to hear oral arguments next month. Or actually, next week, because...
Next week, rent is due on Sunday.
And then the Supreme Court tossed it back because they said, now that you've reissued it, we got to come up with new arguments again, so you guys are going to have to bring it back to us. But the new ban travelers include the existing ones from Iran, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, the more majority Muslim countries, and the newly added Chad in Central Africa, if you don't know where Chad is, North Korea and Venezuela. Chad and North Korea... And Venezuela were added for different issues. Venezuela, it's not the entire country of Venezuela. It's just government officials and their families. So they can't really come in. That's according to this current executive order. But I think that it's odd choices for North Korea to be on, considering that North Koreans can't leave.
That's what struck me about that.
It's a petty move, in my opinion. That's like, it's like, oh, you can't come in. It's not like Kim Jong-un was trying to come over to the United States anyway, you know.
Then they're going to issue a travel ban, and they're going to ban Dennis Rodman, and then all of our hopes of some kind of agreement is just going to come apart.
Then we're screwed. None of those countries. Chad is actually a country that has been fighting terrorism in Africa. So I'd be interested to know what their...
Reason
was for adding Chad. But as we know in this... administration, there are no good reasons. There's just
I don't even remember what show it was that you were talking about. There's intelligence that we don't know.
Absolutely, but we do know the North Korean threat. Like, but there's no reason to ban people from, like, North Koreans aren't coming over here. There just has not been an influx of North Koreans doing terroristic activities around the world.
I mean, at first I was like, wait a minute, they're allowed to travel outside now?
Yeah.
Speaking of allowed to travel, women in Saudi Arabia.
Allowed to travel, allowed to drive.
The king was like, I now have a conscience,
you know,
I am going to let women drive.
It makes those Saudi Arabian men in leadership look better than some Republicans.
Ooh.
I know.
Put that in a tweet
and smoke it. Check out all those stories, including the latest on the women's rights in Saudi Arabia, when you get a chance. Like, scroll your Twitter feed like I do at 1 o'clock in the morning.
We got to find really you some sad. Better
things. I know.
All right. With the 2016 election behind us and the, you know, horror that has ensued, We are getting into action. The resistance has moved into action, and there are groups popping up all across the country to help candidates serve in public office.
And, of course, one of those groups, A Run for Something, is doing just that. You may have remembered us bring up a couple of weeks ago that we announced our partnership with Run for Something in our efforts to get the word out about Democratic candidates and their races. And here to talk more about that and her new book is the former email director of Organizing for Action and my favorite, Hillary for America, and the former and the co-founder of Run for Something. Welcome to the program, Miss Amanda Littman.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
And her cute puppy.
Yeah, we saw that.
That cute puppy. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Yeah. Her name is Sadie. You will probably hear her barking at some point.
Hi, Sadie. Okay, so Amanda, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. Let's start with how Run for Something came about. At what point in the 2016 cycle did you and your co-founder Ross Ricchetto decide to form this organization?
So it was not until a couple weeks after the election. You know, election day came and went. I was sad. I was very tired. I was drunk for a while, and mostly I was angry. I started hearing from some friends from high school and college who were like, "Hey, you've always been a part of politics. I've seen what you put on Facebook. I'm pissed off. I want to run for city council in Chicago. What do I do? Who do I ask for help?" And there wasn't a clear answer. There wasn't somewhere I could send them that I knew would take their call. And that seemed like a problem that had led to a bunch of other problems in the party. You know, a lack of diversity in the local level, a lack of young, new, fresh leadership, a lack of winning progressive seats in local races. So Ross and I started talking about Run for Something probably middle of December, maybe the second week of December, and launched on Inauguration Day.
Nice. So what type of candidates are you guys looking for? Because we always talk about, I mean, Chelsea and I joke a lot about actually running for office, but I don't know.
Joke. We'll see. About it.
Yeah. Are you guys certain criteria? What's the process like for millennials? Because you guys are really focused on millennial candidates. Is there an age range? Like, what is that like for people who are reaching out to you guys?
So we look for folks who are 35-ish or younger and who are first or second time candidates. So if you've never run for office before, you've maybe run once and you lost, we want to talk to you. We exclusively focus on local races. So I don't care if you're running for Congress. That's somebody else's problem. I want to talk to you if you're thinking about running for city council or school board or state legislature. These races where if you're a first-time candidate, you really have a chance at winning because it's all about hustle.
And it seems like the response has been pretty overwhelming. You wanted to help maybe 100 people, and the last I read, there were about 8,000 people that had inquired. What are the latest numbers?
So we're up to more than 11,000 young people across the country who've reached out to us to ask for help. We have endorsed more than 80 candidates across 19 states. So those are folks in 2017 and 2018 who are already on the ballot, up and running. We've worked with them on their campaign plans. We've taken a look at their win numbers and their goals, and we've deemed them, you know, candidates worth investing in and taking the time to work with.
So 11,000 to 80, that's a— are you guys planning on taking— are these upcoming races? What is that like? Because that goes back to that vetting question of how do you pick the 80? Like, what
totally
is—
So we have volunteers who do candidate screening, and it is the most fun volunteer opportunity you can possibly imagine, because you get to spend a half hour on the phone with someone who's thinking about running for office and is passionate and excited and wants to do something. You know, it's so positive. We look for four key things out of potential candidates. One, are you progressive, whatever that means for whatever you are, knowing that a Democrat in, say, Louisiana is different than a Democrat in New York? Two, are you authentically rooted in your community? Three, are you willing to work hard and personally knock doors and make the phone calls you need? And four, are you interesting and compelling to talk to? If you meet those four criteria, we let you in. We have had conversations with, I believe, at this point, about 2,000 of those 11,000 folks.
Wow.
So folks are really thinking about this, and that's 1,000 hours of conversation. The 80 endorsements are people who we're really investing in, both our time and, in some states, our money.
All right. And you are coming out with a book.
Hits— I am.
Virtual shelves next week.
Yeah. You got Hillary Clinton's did a foreword. Jason Kander, who we keep trying to get on the show. We actually keep trying to get Hillary Clinton on the show, but we definitely try to get Jason Kander too. Have written about it, have talked about this book. Don't March, Run for Something, A Real Guide to Fixing the System Yourself. So give us a little preview about what folks are going to be reading about in this book.
Yeah, so my book comes out October 3rd, a week from today, and it is a guide on how to run, why you should run, and what to do if you decide not to run but want to get involved with campaigns. So I really take you through why all of the excuses you're not for not running are total BS.
How campaigns work.
Yeah, you know, it's people tell me, oh, I don't look like a politician. I can't afford it. And it's like, one, if you're not an old, rich, white dude, of course you don't look like a politician. You've got to run anyway. And local races are affordable. You know, 75% of school board races in the United States cost $1,000 or less. These are races where if you're willing to knock the doors, you can win, regardless of how much money you have to spend.
So are you guys partnering with so you got Onward Together, which is now your, I won't say like the umbrella, but Onward Together is kind of like taking a lot of organizations like yours under their wing. What is that? Do you talk about the DNC in the book?
I do. Well, I talk a little bit about what the DNC actually does and doesn't do. And I think a lot of folks think of the party as this single entity made up of a singular opinion, and it does or does not do the right thing. The DNC is a corporation, a business, an organization that does specific things for Democrats. You know, they focus on the presidential nominating program, state parties. They do not determine who wins a primary. They do not actually control Democratic messaging or policies in the same way that they do not actually do stuff for the House or for the Senate. There's different committees for that. And I talk a little bit about how the party structure works and what you can and can't expect as a candidate from the party as an entity. We as an organization work sort of alongside state parties, but we're not officially affiliated with any of the institutions.
So what is that? What have those conversations been like with the DNC from you guys? Is there a conversation about what candidates, you know, from the ground up? I know that both Keith Ellison and Tom Perez have talked about making sure that that Democrats work from the local level all the way to the federal level. Are those conversations happening, and what are they like?
Yeah, they're extremely positive. You know, we actually work more with some of the state parties one-on-one and with the DLCC than with the DNC specifically, but they've been nothing but positive with us. You know, they're really excited that we're taking on a part of the work that's so important that they haven't been able to focus on in the past. And I genuinely don't think it's bad intentions. It's just everyone's got a lot on their plate. So I am really, you know, heartwarmed by the reception that we've gotten, not just from the DNC, but from groups ranging from, you know, the Hillary part of the Democratic Party to the Bernie part of the Democratic Party and everything in between and beyond. Folks are so positive about what we're doing because they know that this isn't about necessarily which part of the partisan spectrum you're on. It's about young, fresh, diverse leadership in these offices that are fighting for our values.
Awesome. I mean, is there now a new goal about how many people that you want to connect with since you blew away your 100 person goal? I mean, do people hear this number 11,000 and think, oh, there's a lot of people running, I don't need to?
You know, I think people feel really invigorated by the number. They think, a lot of folks will say to me, you know, I didn't think I could run because I've never seen another 20 something or early 30 something run for office. But what you're telling me is I'm not alone. And I'm not the only one doing this. And that alone makes me know that I can step up. So our goal, hopefully, is we would like to recruit 50,000 potential candidates by the end of next
June.
That's amazing. Yeah. So over the next, 7 months, we're hoping to increase that number 5 times.
That's amazing. So back to the book real quick. So A Real Guide to Fixing the System Yourself. So you, Amanda, what parts of the political system do you believe need changing?
So I think that if you're running for office, especially for state legislature, you should fix voting rights. And if you're running for Congress, you should fix campaign finance. I think this is my personal opinion, I think you fix the mechanics of the system, then everything else sort of gets a lot easier. That it's hard for people to vote and it's hard to know who's spending money in politics is dangerous for our democracy.
And then on the other side of that, because we just talked about the DNC, we talked about the system, what do you think Democrats... because you guys are really focused on Democrats, and, you know, Chelsea and I don't make it a secret that we are both Democrats on this show, but very different Democrats in that respect. What do you think Democrats need to be focused on going into, what are you guys telling your candidates to really be focused on going into 2018? And Do you see, you know, we talked about Graham Cassidy at the beginning of the show and how important it is for Democrats to get out and vote next year. Do you see the party succeeding over the next couple of elections as they shift that focus, the focus that you think that we should be on?
So I'm not really a big proponent of like a national party message. I think that's a little one. It's never going to happen. And two, it's a little ridiculous to assume that we can all agree on any singular thing. I do think that it's worth us investing in better people. We need to find compelling, authentic candidates who are working on local issues. So like I'm really excited by, for example, one of our candidates in Virginia, Danica Rome, who's running in a district against a honestly extraordinarily homophobic Republican. If she wins, she'll be one of the first trans people in the Virginia State House of Delegates.
I remember her story. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, she's incredible. She could be running on a big issue about making a signpost for equality. What she won't stop talking about is traffic in her district and Route 28 and the stoplights that are there that are making people's commutes miserable. And I think that kind of focus on hyper-local issues that matter to people and that directly affect their lives, their pocketbooks, and their families is what Democratic candidates around the country should be doing.
So you're almost saying kind of focus, like take a small step back from identity politics and focus on more on localizing that message as best as you can, because it's very easy for it would be very easy for Danica to talk about LGBT issues in that area and make that a part of the platform. But that's obviously not what what works for that town, works for that district. So, you know, I agree that in that national message piece of it, because I do think that people forget that we have 50 states and with very you know, 50 states, 535 different legislation, everybody has an opinion on something. And making that, I think that the DCCC probably should do a little bit better job of localizing their candidates. And obviously you guys are doing that. Is there a coaching that goes involved in those candidates? I know you guys are investing money in candidates and time, but is there, hey, I'm crafting this message for you, or I'm helping you craft your message. I'm helping you kind of reach out to voters. What is that like? What is that operation like?
Yeah, so we have state leads in about 2/3 of the country who are experts in the local politics of their state that help guide our candidates through the intricacies of any particular region. We also have about 200 or so mentors who are experts in tactical parts of the campaigns. So a communications mentor, field mentors, policy mentors who basically do office hours with our candidates and set up one-on-one time. So in between the big weekend trainings that organizations like Emily's List and Wellstone and the PCCC do, we're providing the one-to-one connection that candidates, especially ones that don't have a lot of staff, really need.
So what races do you guys have coming up? What are your big races? I know November's like around the corner. November's like tomorrow, I feel like.
I know. we've got a few folks in primaries next Tuesday, including a special election in California. For Wendy Carrillo, we then have a bunch of candidates up in November. We're working with 10 candidates in Virginia. We've got folks in we're working with a guy running for city clerk of Detroit. We're working with a couple North Carolina candidates, including a young guy who I think has just such a bright future in politics, Pierce Freeland, who's running for mayor of Durham. Whether he wins or not, that guy's got a long career ahead of him because he is just extraordinarily compelling. And then we're starting to prep for 2018. You know, we've got folks running in primaries and elections basically from February all the way through November of 2018.
Awesome. So where can any candidate or anybody listening find out more information on the organization and how to get themselves involved if they want to run for something?
Yes. Runforsomething.net is us online. If you want to run for office, runforsomething.net/run-for-office. If you want to volunteer, it's just /volunteer. And if you're curious about the book, it's just runforsomething.net/book. We're also on Twitter and Facebook and anywhere else you might expect to find us on the internet.
And where can they follow you on Twitter?
Amanda Lippman, straightforward.
Awesome. We'll leave it right there. Thanks so much, Amanda. That was so much fun. We will be discussing with you over the next couple of weeks the first round of candidates that are going to come on our show. So I'm very excited, especially hopefully to have Danica and Pierce. I went to college in North Carolina, so in Raleigh. So Raleigh is a stone throw away from Durham. So to have that conversation with Pierce would be great.
Our candidates are amazing. They're going to knock your socks off.
I'm excited. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Don't forget you can follow Amanda on Twitter at Amanda Littman. What a great organization.
Doesn't that make you feel better about life?
It does. Just listening to all of those, you know, we talked about the Obama Foundation last week and what they're doing. Just seeing people in action is always really fun. I know when we reached out to, we talked about reaching out to run for something, we were like, yeah, we got to do it.
Yeah.
Like, this is the future. This is what should be happening right now.
This is, for me, the only silver lining of Trump.
Yeah.
Except it has made us reach but really
we got to get there first. We got to make sure that we're not, that North Korea, that the crazy is not going to happen. We got to get to 2018. Too. We got to get out of 2017 first.
Yeah. Hopefully by following the Constitution, honoring it, living up to it, and not trying to stampede all over people's rights.
Yeah.
Donald Trump, in his Alabama speech, it was a stump speech for Luther Strange last Friday, came out with comments about the NFL players who are kneeling and how they should be, those sons of whatever should be tossed out and fired. And this just became the
talk of the town.
Talk, you're right.
Talk of the world. But it was crazy because he started out the speech not talking about the kneeling. He was talking about, and I said this on the Trump Report last week, where Donald Trump has this masculine problem.
Hyper-masculine, but not masculine enough, so he's compensating.
Compensating.
It's like an overcompensating.
Because we know he doesn't watch football, even though I was reading a story today where he apparently tried to be a part of the NFL or something like that, and they wouldn't let him.
Oh, so he wanted a team.
He wanted a team in the NFL, right. And then he had, like, the some side football league or whatever that kind of crumbled and failed, like most Trump things. But he started talking about the league and their practices and their policies on how hard people can be hit or like concussions and things like that, and how like
the ratings like are going down, like, how because it's becoming too soft.
Too soft, right. And then he segued, I'm sure it was not in his speech at all, into this rant on Colin Kaepernick and the NFL.
Right.
Bizarre.
Not surprised
because out of all that, and this is just a sidebar conversation out of the NFL thing, because he was stumping for Luther Strange, who has now lost the Alabama state primary, probably because of this. But I don't know, Roy Moore, Alabamans, I don't know what's going on. My parents are from Birmingham. I don't know what's going on in Alabama. But he said he only met Luther Strange once and that he really didn't know him. This is a part of the stump speech. This is probably why Luther Strange lost, because Donald Trump didn't even know the guy.
And in the speech, this was the same speech where he's like, man, getting healthcare stuff is hard. I call people up and everybody wants to have lunch or breakfast or dinner with me and their aunt and their uncle and their cousins, and they all want pictures. And, you know, this is exhausting. And but Luther Strange didn't ask me for any of that. He said, I could count.
And if you guys have seen pictures, I think we have a photo. I think we threw up a photo of this rally. There is this big thing behind Donald Trump that says Luther on it. But on the other side, it said Trump on it. And so it became this, it said vote for Luther, and then it said Donald Trump's name in the exact, as big as Luther Strange's name, as if it was a Trump rally. And so then that gave Donald Trump this idea that this was all about Donald Trump.
Sure.
So it was less about Luther Strange and more about Donald Trump, because at one point Donald Trump said that he may have made a mistake endorsing Strange. Like, not in so many words. He said, because even if Strange lost, like he did tonight, he'd be down there campaigning like hell for Roy Moore. In the middle of the rally. For Luther Strange.
I missed that part. Really?
Yes.
That's a real thing. It was the craziest thing.
Yeah, he said, I'll be down there campaigning like hell for the Chiefs. He didn't name Roy Moore by name, but he said, I'll be down here campaigning for the other guy. Like, it's bizarre.
Okay. All right. But the whole country was just fixated on the players and the NFL's response to Trump, which really was to push back against him for being divisive and so on and so forth. And then this has led us down the conversation about how constitutional it is that Trump would infringe on First Amendment rights, and is it really a First Amendment issue in the first place? And so I thought I would put my lawyer cap on and give you my political breakdown, or my legal breakdown, if you will. So this is a form of protest. They're They want to bring awareness and protest to the way that minorities are being treated specifically by law enforcement. And so they have chosen to kneel during the national anthem as a form of protest. People who are for the players' rights to kneel are getting mistaken by asserting the First Amendment right. Yes, the First Amendment protects your free speech, including things like kneeling, but it protects it from infringement by the government, not by, say, the NFL. So if Trump had said, I want those people to stand up and I'm sending in the National Guard to make them stand up, then that would be a violation of the First Amendment. But without government interference, this is not a First Amendment issue. What it then becomes is actually an employment issue because these players are kneeling during the course and scope of their work. And so for that, you got to look to employment law. And most of us are at-will employees, right. You know. They don't like something, they don't like anything. We actually don't have unlimited First Amendment rights the way people think. I mean, you can't be obscene, you can't incite violence, you can't lie, although there's an exception to the exception because politicians are allowed to lie. And you don't have free rein to say what you want at work. Your employer can fire you for virtually anything, unless you're a federal employee and you can't be fired for who you endorse. Anyways, so if you look at the NFL players, they've got contracts. And right. In those contracts, of course, they're very heavily worded in favor of the league being able to discipline you for behavior that they don't like. And it doesn't say specifically you can't kneel, but it basically says you can't do things that are sort of against the interest of the NFL and your teams. And so it's really a very subjective decision.
Right.
Because although the NFL may have the legal right to do something about this, to stop this, it's going to be perhaps worse for them to stop these players from doing this in the eyes of the public.
Right.
And ratings might drop for different reasons, and it could, and that could harm the NFL. So I don't think that the NFL is going to stop this.
There certainly aren't. It would be a PR nightmare to be on the other side. I mean, from a historical standpoint, if people remember, the polling on the March on Washington and the polling on sit-ins and different things like that was like 85-15. Like this is history repeating itself all over again, and we know that it takes a long time for things to catch up in terms of public opinion. And just a couple of quick things real quick. The national anthem piece of the football games
did not
start until like 2009.
Right, because it was
they were paid
millions of dollars.
The NFL was paid to patriotize.
That's a good word.
That's a good.
It's like patronize, but
patriotize. Ooh,
yeah.
Let's use that.
Right. So this is like almost a commercial gain.
Right.
That a form of recruitment, if you will.
Right.
Through the NFL. But speaking of the anthem and the flag, that is what people on the right are harping on, that this is so disrespectful to the flag, how dare you? But there are many other forms of disrespecting the flag. In fact, they're laid out in like a
in the US flag code.
And you know what's in there? All sorts of fun things.
Like
you cannot wear the flag at all. I mean, you've seen people have got socks, a shirt that has the American flag.
I've seen many Trump rallies with the American flag all over themselves.
That is disrespectful of the flag. You may not wear it in any form. Not as a costume.
So no Uncle Sam costumes this year.
No, it shouldn't be anywhere on you. And how about this? Have you ever been to a 4th of July barbecue and had the flag as your napkin and your plate and all that? That is a disrespectful thing to the flag. You cannot have the flag on anything that is just temporarily used.
Right.
You can't have any word or image or anything over the flag. So any meme out there with the flag and any words over it, you're disrespecting the flag. And I have not heard any protest about these uses of the flag at all.
Well, because it's not just about the flag. So as far as I understand, Colin Kaepernick was going to start his, and because we're going to talk about the NBA in a second, because Colin Kaepernick started out his protest on racial injustice and using his platform to do that, where he was going to sit down. during the national anthem and during this whole thing. And a vet asked him not to sit down, but asked him to kneel instead. And that's where the change came in. So it's not like Colin Kaepernick wasn't listening. It wasn't. This is not some disrespect thing to veterans, and not some disrespect thing to the flag or the country. But it is an acknowledgement of injustices in the country. Now, the crazy thing is that it took so many. This weekend it was like, you know, it started out earlier this year with like 6 football players, and then this weekend it was like 200 football players. So why did it take 200 football players and owners and coaches to somehow, for some reason, decide that now is the good time to think about racial injustice in the country because Donald Trump said so. And I can guarantee you, and I think I posted this on Facebook, and Shannon Sharp said it too, white owners do not like being told what to do by other people or people of their own kind. In this case, other billionaires or semi-billionaires or maybe $100,000-naires like Donald Trump. And but we're going to find out because the IRS has those tax returns. Robert Mueller has those tax returns. So we're going to find out at some point how much Donald Trump is worth. But that's the reality of the situation is people come out. Obviously, this is American. People come out in their own times and come out in many ways in their own time. And you know, this should have been something that the NFL and at this point the NBA with Steph Curry this weekend and Donald Trump's comments on Twitter about him, that should have happened a long time ago. It was a little late to the party. I mean, Ray Lewis was out there on both his knees this weekend. I'm like, Ray Lewis didn't even think this was Ray Lewis last year when this whole thing started thought this was crazy.
Now he's
looking like he was in church.
The attention has reached a level of critical mass. And then Trump saying anything about it is going to bring more attention to it. I actually think that Trump's comments garnered the players more support in the eyes of the American public.
Right, but the players should have been there from the beginning, is what I'm saying. Like, you know, we talk about...
But they reasonably could have been afraid of what would
the
happen.
Backlash.
And I've seen people post on social media like, you better stand your ass up or else you're going to lose your job. And I'm like, this is the thing about these leaders, these heroes, is that they are principled and they will care less, maybe not at all, about the money. They're going to do it for the principle of it. But to say that they should stand up because they're going to lose their jobs, I mean, people are losing their lives. Right. So in comparison, it's no big thing to sacrifice their job, and I don't think that they're really going to. The NFL is going to fire hundreds of players all at once. Right. What's that going to do to the league? They're not even going to.
And I will tell you, the Dallas Cowboys kind of did their thing this weekend, and people were booing them, but it didn't stop those people. People did not leave the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
People were still out there cheering. People are so weird. It's like it's very odd to me that you would boo, and then like you disagree with it, but you're still out there watching people play the game. Like, figure out what you're going to do. I do want to bring up something that a friend of mine said on Facebook and that I thought was really interesting. I think we're going to pull it up. My friend Allison in Illinois said, so you take a knee when someone is injured as a sign of respect. You get on your knees when you humble yourself before God. Players are taking a knee. There's still respect behind a kneel. When they are still for the anthem, respect for those who fight and die for this country to allow those to protest the fundamental issues there are in this country. Now, I'm a military dependent, and so this is...
Military dependent, that sounds really official.
It is. I'm a military brat. Military brat.
Tell it like it is.
Yeah, but I wasn't a brat. Maybe I was a little bit of a brat. And me personally, I remember, you know, if you're on a military base, it's a very weird situation to begin with. And... at 6 o'clock, when taps are played, or when the sun goes down, your cars stop when the national anthem, because the national anthem is played over the entire base.
Every day?
Every day.
6
flag
PM.
Goes down, well, sunset. Flag goes down, cars stop, sunset, because the flag's going down. And you can hear it. And some people get out of their cars. People are on the side of the road. They're kind of standing at attention. This is what happens on military bases. And that is military people, military dependents, military wives, everybody, you know, understand that piece of it. So our viewpoint of the flag is very different than those people who haven't served. You know, they obviously they respect the flag in a certain way, or unless they're wearing it or whatever. But there is a according to my friend Allison, you know, there is a different level of respect that the military understands what they're fighting for, and that fight is to allow people like Colin Kaepernick, any NBA person, to say what they want to say. It gives those people in Charlottesville the right to protest what they were doing. Not the people, you know, non-crazy people, but the crazy people out in Charlottesville, it gave them the right to do that.
To protest the removal of
the Confederate flags. What's crazy to me is the same people that are crying about us, you know, defending the, you know, or these people kind of disrespecting the flag are the same people that are A, flying the Confederate flag, and B, the same people who did not want Confederate flags, the Confederate statues removed. So, which one is it?
I see what you're saying.
You know, which one is it? Because the Confederate flag was created
as the antithesis
to the American flag. Ah. So you can't have one. You either got to choose one. You got to have one or the other. You can't have both. And in this case,
hopefully you'll choose
the American flag, or at least in your eyes. Could you imagine?
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that aspect.
You're right. So it's crazy. So you know. We definitely want to know what you guys think about this kind of whole situation. So we are doing a new thing, question of the week. I'm going to throw the question of the week, and then we'll tweet it out so you'll have a chance to kind of do the poll. I'm going to tweet it out as I'm reading it off. The question is, do celebrities and people in the spotlight lose their right to express themselves freely? Hashtag take a knee. Go to @thepoliticalbeat. Or Political Beat TV on Twitter. I'm going to tweet it out right now. And then you can give us your thoughts on the polls. Leave your comments in the comment section or email us at thepoliticalbeat@gmail.com.
And while Drexel tweets,
It's out.
I'll start the spotlight. So this is where we highlight an organization or a person, an issue that we think that you should check out. And this week our focus is on Puerto Rico. I mean, have you seen the pictures coming out of there? Like houses with like roofs just completely off, and like families inside, like trying to.
They are without power, but you know they started without power last week. No running water. And Hillary Clinton came out a couple of days ago and said, you know, the USNS Comfort needs to go down there.
A naval ship.
USNS Comfort is going out now. Thanks. Probably not. I'm sure James Mattis probably said something at some point, not because Hillary Clinton said it, but she did say it first.
wants you to know that.
No, I'm just saying, but I mean, like, you know, it looks like she did, because I read a Hill thing that said that Hillary Clinton demanded that the Trump administration. I'm like, she didn't demand, she suggested. Like, there's a difference. You know, she gave a suggestion, whatever. You know, my fiance is from Puerto Rico, and so I've seen a lot of the things that have been going on there. I've seen friends of mine who are asking on Facebook about family members and stuff like that and how devastating it is down there.
One article I saw called it, like, apocalyptic damage.
Right. I read somewhere today that said that it has set back Puerto Rico at least 20 to 30 years in terms of agriculture, in terms of livelihood and stuff like that. And they're going to need some help rebuilding, because what I don't think that people quite understand is that Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. Puerto Ricans are Americans as much as any other state,
as much as
D.C., which also does not have representation in Congress. So. Even though they pay taxes. So, you know, that's something that people have to realize. If Puerto Rico was Texas, it'd be very different.
Right. We all were paying a lot of attention to Harvey.
Sure were.
And this hurricane brought, like, Harvey-like floods and Irma-like winds and... You know, this Maria lady, she did quite a number on the island. And one of the scarier parts are the lack of medical supplies. I saw a reporter say that she'd visited 3 hospitals. None of them had running water. And every hospital that she had visited said that they were just days away from running out of supplies. So the organization that we want to spotlight this week is AmeriCares, which donates medical aid to disaster areas. They've helped more than 90 countries and all 50 states in the United States with over $600 million in health programs and medical aid and supplies. And so you can check them out and consider donating to them to help Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and I know the organization that President Obama, President Bush, President Carter, President Clinton, and President Bush 43 have all have kind of added Puerto Rico, added Maria to their existing, I think it's called, I can't remember what it's called, like One America, One something. You can check Barack Obama's Twitter feed. I do want to say real quick some hellos for those in the chat room. Our good friend from the Trump Report, Shareable, Texas, in the chat room. Our Scott Brown. Awesome. In the chat room as well as James Farsi and Chris. Hello to all of those guys in the chat room. We love having you guys. I'm seeing everything that you say. I'll read them later and try to comment, but definitely leave your comments in the comment section below because we always respond and we always want to give you guys shout outs on the show. So if you guys have questions or anything that we talked about today, definitely leave your comments and yeah.
And follow us over to the Trump Report where we, you know, go from serious to silly about politics.
Yeah.
We let our political hair down, if you will.
Yeah, I let all my hair down. It's a lot of fun. Of course, the Grey's Anatomy after show is back. All the fall shows are back this week. Grey's Anatomy is coming back. Will and Grace after show. We will do an after show here on AfterBuzz TV. For that, not me, but Tim will be on the Will and Grace after show. So it'll be good to have him there. Be sure to follow us. Be sure to follow AfterBuzz TV at AfterBuzz TV on all social media to find out when all of your favorite shows are on. Thanks to Amanda Lippman from Run for Something. Go get her book next week on shelves on next Tuesday.
Virtual shelves.
Virtual shelves. I have a copy. Chelsea has a copy. It's really great. A lot of fun. Leave your comments on YouTube and subscribe to The Political Beat on iTunes podcast. We will see you next Tuesday right here on The Political Beat.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.